who's in control. And help us to remember that you gave us these steps. And we're so very grateful. And we pray these things in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Everybody, I'm Stevie B, and I'm a grateful believer, and I'm a recovering alcoholic and a recovering alcoholic. And a proud member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
It's great to be here with you guys tonight. Tonight we're going to be talking about the 10 steps, so we got 3 more weeks. The final 3. It's the final countdown, exactly, Todd. Final countdown. For those that are interested in seeing what we're going to be going over tonight, I took the liberty of making 10-step inventory sheets, and there's plenty. There's plenty. Take one and make copies. No, you don't have to get them now. I mean, I'm telling you, there's plenty. But you could get them now. I mean, but we're going to be going over them. We're going to be going over them. Now, everything that we're going to be discussing tonight comes out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 86, 87, and 88. See, you've heard me talk about these 3 pages over and over and over again, but tonight I'm going to actually show you where it applies. Do you think maybe we should just pass the... Yeah? Just pass the box?
Yeah.
Let's pass the box. Okay, let's pass the box. If you're here for the first time tonight, I want to say welcome. And as a great speaker that's going to be coming in a couple weeks from now, as you heard, Paul Lee always likes to say, you're off the hook. If you're here tonight, you're off the hook. You don't have to worry about coming in. William, were you out there in the prayer circle? Nice. Nice. You don't have to worry about coming in. You're already here. You don't have to get sober. If you're in this meeting tonight, you already are sober. You've already taken the first step. You know, I heard something tonight, and at first I got offended, and then I felt blessed by it. You know, Owen, who's not here with us this week, we used to be a member of a home group called the Pompano Big Book Study. And I was asked to leave that group. And I was asked to leave that group because I had a bad attitude. And I didn't know how to behave myself. As a matter of fact, my good friend Anthony, we were in a halfway house together 9 years ago, and we both didn't know how to behave ourselves. The way we met is that he had a chair and I had a chair, and we were about to hit each other with the chairs. But I conducted myself that way inside Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't want to. I don't say that to brag. Every meeting I would start, and I would have a good attitude, and then someone would say something, and I would get offended, and then I would become offensive. So my reputation in AA was like a hothead. George, I'm sure you can't relate to any of that, but I was like a hothead. And when you're a hothead, people are... They'll spend a little time with you, but they're not going to continue, at least if you're a guy. I don't know how it works with the ladies. But if you're a hothead, they'll spend a little time with you, but if you're not willing to be teachable, they'll move on. You understand? People are not going to work harder at your program than you're going to work at your program. And so I had good intentions. I was a well-intended young man in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was a hothead. And eventually men, who is what men need in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, men move on. The Big Book talks about moving on to more, I forget the actual words, but moving on to someone else who wants it. And so men moved on in my life because I continued to be high maintenance. That you can relate to, high maintenance. The girls can relate to high maintenance. I was high maintenance. But I wasn't like high maintenance for high heels. I was high maintenance for like hitting you. And so that gets old real fast in AA. That gets old real fast. So I used to have a reputation. Tonight, there was, and you guys know who I'm talking about. There was a young man coming over here from your house, from your house next door. And he was mocking me. He said he didn't know I was there, or he didn't care. And he said, I'm not going into the church service. I'm not going into that church service. I don't go to Bible studies. And he said, I already got kicked out of Catholic church. I'm not going back. You know, like mocking that we pray before the meeting. And at first I was like, man, that's offensive. And then immediately I was like, wow, what a blessing. You know, they used to make fun of me because I was a hothead and a jerk. And now they're making fun of me because the meeting I start off with prayer. That's an amazing blessing. That's incredible. What a transformation. What a transformation. And I'm only going to use this word once in the entire 12-step series because I don't use it because it's Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was a crackhead that lived around the corner from here in a halfway house 9.5 years ago. And now I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous that loves God, loves his brothers and sisters, and likes to pray before he starts a meeting so that I don't show up at the podium, but he shows up at the podium. And what an incredible blessing that is. What an incredible transformation. My whole life, I was running the show. My whole life, I was the big shot. My whole life, I thought I was the real deal. My dad was always saying, and by the way, my parents are here. If you're here for the first time, my mom and dad and my wife are here. Now, if you don't think that that is an incredible blessing, that my parents would want to sit in a meeting where I'm speaking, where my dad used to cringe at the sound of my voice, and I don't say that to make a laugh. I'm serious. My dad used to cringe at the sound of my voice, and he used to say words like this, sentences, you speak just to hear yourself speak. Can't you learn to be low-key? Low-key, that's a person that has humility. That's a person that's not drawing attention to himself. Can't you learn to be low-key? Can't you listen instead of speak? And now we go to meetings together all during the week where we get to hear each other speak. My wife had an opportunity tonight to go to a Broadway show over at the Broward Center. Exactly. Thank you, Jimmy. And she chose to come here tonight to the 12-step house. Now, if you don't think that's a miracle, my wife flew to Colombia and escaped our marriage. When I was self-will run riot in our house, she escaped and left in the worst part of our life because she couldn't take it. Now we're joined at the hip. I didn't disappear on Valentine's Day yesterday. What I mean by disappear is not like for a couple hours. I mean like disappear on Valentine's Day, show up on Easter. That type of disappearing. I didn't do that. I woke up yesterday morning before my wife did. And I had a couple little, nothing expensive. I had a little card to remind her that when I was 9 years ago, my first present that I was ever able to give her, because I didn't have any money. I was, like I said, I was living in the halfway house. And the only reason I was able to even live there, because she was paying the bill. The first present I was able to give her, so my sobriety date is January 3rd. It's February 14th, so I had a month and a week. And I was able to put together a little money that I had stashed away from working at our store. And I put together like $25, and that was my first present in sobriety. A Valentine's Day present for my wife when I was a month sober. And I wrote that in the card, with, you know, nothing fancy, a little stuffed animal, and I just said how much I loved her. Now that only happens by the grace of God, surrendering to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and knowing that it has nothing to do with me. This is such a great privilege. And by the way, I want to thank the Fort Lauderdale 12-step group for asking me to do the steps. It's quite a privilege, and I appreciate you guys believing in me a couple years ago and having either the guts or the faith to ask me to do this, and it's been a total blessing. And this 12-step series has definitely transformed a lot in our family and transformed our house and also the way that I look at the steps. One of the great things, and I just want to throw that out for you, if you haven't sponsored people yet, and if you're even contemplating sponsoring, one of the wonderful things about sponsoring, guys, is you get to go and read up on the stuff that you don't know. So, like tonight, it was the first time I ever read the 10th step. You know, it was like, I've been doing this for a couple years, and this is my third step series, And this was the first time I read the 10th step. Now, I don't know if it's because I have a terrible memory or if God is showing me things that I didn't see before, but the spot check inventory that Mark text messaged me today was something that was new for me. I don't know how I forgot it, but this is all, it's all new. So one of the great things that we're going to be talking about in the next couple weeks is when we get to the 12th step is giving it away. Now, for those of you guys that are in a halfway house or at a treatment center, you give it away while you're there. Give it away while you're there. My best friend Mason will tell you that when I was in the halfway house, although I was insane, I was conducting step meetings inside the halfway house, but my intentions were sort of good. So you can give it away. You can give it away no matter where you're at. Give it away. Because there's a guy that's coming in or a girl that's coming into the program who no one's going to show love to except for you. And we are responsible. You see that sign on the back of the wall that says that I am responsible? When it says I am responsible, that's not I am responsible. That's not they are responsible. It means you are responsible. That we're responsible. That anytime the hand of AA is there. And brother and sister, let me tell you something. That's you. And in Al-Anon, they have a similar thing. It says we are responsible anytime, anywhere. The hand of Al-Anon, it's like a whole beautiful thing. And there's more flowery stuff in there, but it's the same thing. They're so much better writers, and they have so much more, you know. So if you ever want to hear the real I am responsible, with the Al-Anon one is great. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard in meetings where people slam Al-Anon and make fun of Al-Anon, but let me tell you something about the program of Al-Anon, and I mean this for the guys too. Al-Anon helped save our marriage. Al-Anon is what pointed us to a relationship in the programs together. And I don't know about you, but I have relationship issues. And Al-Anon helped me with some of those relationship issues, and I've only scratched the surface, but it is an amazing program if you have relationship issues. Let me tell you something. My qualifier is sitting right up here on the podium, and I've had to go to a lot of meetings for our friendship over the years. Because I want to manage and manipulate, and I want to fix, and I want to do all that kind of stuff. So if you don't think that, if you're having problems with relationships in your life, there's a great program, it's called Al-Anon. And it's a come-alongside program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, let's get down to step 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it.
Promptly.
That's exactly right, Rhonda. That's exactly right, promptly. I appreciate that you just mentioned that. There's this guy, you guys, anybody knows Ricky D in here? Anybody know Ricky D? Little Trinidad guy, Ricky D? Every time we were in a home group in the back room at the 11-step group, every time he'd always say promptly, right after that, promptly. And it's true. One of the key words in the 10th step is promptly. One of the ways that you can check your program is on how promptly or how quickly you can admit you're wrong to your fellows. You'd be able to check your ego on how promptly you were able to make amends. You see, the last couple steps that we spoke about, step 8, step 9, now step 10, all have to do with humility. See, there's two roads in a relationship. There's two roads in the relationships that you have. One is the high road and one is the low road. One is the high road and one is the low road. The world, or what we've been told, or Madison Avenue or TV says, take the high road. You deserve it. You know, the big slogan is, you deserve it. God is saying, take the low road. God is saying, take the humble road. God is saying, go and make amends. If you have a choice between being ego and grandiosity, or the high road or the low road, always, for the sake of your sobriety, take the low road. Speaking of a person that usually takes the low road. Guys, do we have any seats? We have one seat? One seat? We have one seat, Spike-alicious, right next to, okay. See that? That was taking the low road. You see that? Man comes from work, dress clothes on, sits on the floor. That's taking the low road. What an amazing example of taking the low road. If there's a choice between standing up in the bus or giving a seat to a lady or giving a seat to a person you'd like, you get up and give them the seat. Now, I know that this is stuff that we've been taught, but somehow during our addiction, this is mine, I want to get mine, I need to show up for mine. Somehow we started grabbing life with two hands, and we forgot that to really be to be closer to our divine God, we need to do those things of taking the low road. The tenth step has to do with taking a look at our assets and our defects and our liabilities. It has to do with taking our personal inventory. And let me tell you something. This is not easy. The tenth step is really a step where you'll know if you're in the deal on how you're acting. Now, the sheets that I handed out tonight that I had... Spike, you'll like this. I had sheets. I brought sheets. The last time I brought sheets to a meeting... was the last time he was at a meeting with me. But these are taken right out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is at the end of the day, we call this our 10-step inventory. Okay? If you don't have the sheets, or if you didn't want to take the sheets, or if you thought it would look uncool if you took a sheet, it's on page 86 and 87 and 88 of the big book. You guys know that page 86 and 87 and 88, I think, that are some of the most inspired pages of the big book. Just listen to this. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours a day ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. You know, I was in a meeting this morning at 7 a.m., and the speaker kept speaking about how he hears from God a lot. And I don't think he means audibly, because it wasn't like that, but he hears from God maybe inspirationally. And I wrote down on my paper, it was a study, and I wrote down on my paper, God, how come I never hear from you? And I just wrote it down. I wasn't really complaining, but I was almost like asking. I mean, a speaker that I really respect, Jerry Sharp, he always asks the room before he speaks, how many people in here would like to hear from God directly? And for me, I always pray that when I come up to the podium that you're not hearing from me directly at all. That God speaks through me somehow, some way, however he does that. And so I want to hear from God. I'd like to get inspiration from the God. And page 86 speaks about, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours a day ahead, and let's ask God for inspiration on our day. So this morning I said, I wrote it down on the paper. God, I'd like to hear more from you. Or I'd like to even hear from you. I'd like to know where my next part of my life is going to be. Because if you see over here on the page of 8, bottom of 86, for those that are following in the book, it says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. Does anybody face indecision in their days here? Anybody face indecision? Just six of you? Okay, six of you face indecision. That's great. The rest of you are just doing great. And then when you face indecision, and you have a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, what do you usually do when you face indecision? What do you usually do? You call another person in AA. You call another person in AA. Another broken mental case, outpatient person that just got out of the same mental hospital that you escaped from. And you call them up and you say, what would you do in this situation? And then with all their best faculties, they get together and then they usually call their sponsor, who's an escaped mental patient from 27 years ago. And then everyone gets together. Let me tell you something. That does work. Okay, that does work. My mental patients are all on this side of the room. That's the guys that I go to. And some of them have 40 years, and some of them have 20 years, and some of them have a couple days. That's why I call around. But let me tell you where I get some amazing inspiration. From the creator of the men and women inside Alcoholics Anonymous. When I went to him, I've gotten some amazing inspiration. I remember about 4 or 5 years ago, my wife and I, there was a guy in AA that I really respected. He had a lot of money. Well, I don't know if he had a lot of money, but to me, he looked like he had a lot of money. You know, which means he drove a car. Basically, that's what I'm saying. You know, so, and he was older. So I just imagine he knew what he was doing. And I was 5 years sober, and Talkie Tom. You know Talkie. Remember Wendy Talkie Tom from the 11-step group? We called him Talkie Tom because he liked to talk. And so Talkie Tom was talking to me about an investment. It was right before, it was an investment in real estate. Now, I was looking around and I was seeing all these people make great investments in real estate, and they were doing this thing called flipping, which means you buy this condo or you buy this house, and before you need to actually pay for it, you can flip it and you can get your money back. But like more money than you put in. So let's say like let's say that the condo's worth $100,000, but you really only have to put in like $10,000. And then before you actually have to put in the money, you can go and sell it and you get back $20,000. So you didn't really put the money in, but all of a sudden you have $10,000 in your bank account. At least this is the way I understood the story to be. And, you know, that kind of seemed like a good deal to me. I like that idea, you know? Before you actually really put money in, money shows up in your bank account twice as much. So I was listening to him, and he was telling me about flipping. And I asked another guy, do you think that flipping condos is a good idea? And of course I asked the person in the program, who also had a car, you know, so I thought he was wealthy. And he's like, yeah, it's a great great investment. Flipping condos is a great investment. Now, right at that moment, there was things going on behind the scenes called bank loans, foreclosures, and all those kinds of things. I didn't know about that. I mean, I didn't really understand the whole thing. And right at that moment, real estate in Florida did its own flip. And it stopped doing, you know, so I wanted to do my flip, but real estate in Florida did its own flip. And here I am, and I invested in this condo, and of course I said to my wife, I think this is a great thing to get into. And my wife always said, just like she says today, why don't we pray about it? She always says, why don't we pray about it? And I always say, I already have. You know what I mean? I've already cut her off at the pen. you follow me where I'm going on this, right? Yeah. Apparently some of you other guys have done the same thing. So I'll say, I've already prayed about it. I feel inspired. Well, let me just tell you that the whole flipping thing didn't work that great for us. But what happened was I went to human inspiration. Human inspiration. And let me tell you something. Human inspiration is amazing. There's a gentleman inside this meeting. I asked about an investment about 6 months ago, and he told me definitely don't do it. And I appreciated his feedback, but I didn't. You know what I'm saying? Because really when I go to you for inspiration, I'm just hoping that you back up the decision I've already made. You know what I'm saying? I've already made the decision, and I'm hoping that you'll back me up on it. Basically, is what I do. So let me tell you, that's not what God is looking for. And you know what's amazing? What our deal is with God is that after we've already made our decision and we follow through with what we want to do anyway, then we always ask God to what? To bless it. So we make the decision. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've had sponsees come to me and say, listen, this girl, she's got a strong 3 months. Let me tell you something. No, you don't understand. Hold on. Don't laugh. This girl's got a strong 3 months. She works a program. I said, listen, if she worked a program, she wouldn't have anything to do with you. You understand? So once we think we're hearing from God, usually it's not from God. You understand? So it's funny because I viewed the same thing before I was married. I was going, no, she's worked the steps. She has worked the steps. I'm telling you, she has worked the steps. Listen, a line that I heard recently, a line, and this goes for the guys, of course, too. It's not a girl, it's a guy thing. It's everything. When something already starts off impure, nothing good can come from it. For the lawyers that are in the room, for the two of you that are lawyers, you know that there's that fruit from the proverbial forbidden tree, which means, well, how's it go? Thank you, exactly, Bob. The one lawyer and the other lawyers in the lobby talking. Fruit. Tell me again. Fruit. Of the poisonous tree. This is what that means. Bad in, bad out. Okay? You're never going to be able to go like this. No, that guy's got a strong 2.5 months. He used to be sober a long time. He's back in a halfway house now, and I think I can fix him if I really work real hard on him. Nothing good can come of that. If you could just remember that line. This is my wife's new saying this year to tell me that is, as soon as I start to justify what I'm about to explain to her, as soon as I start to backtrack, she says like this to me. Trish, she goes like this. Steve, nothing good can come from what you're about to say. As soon as I have to start re-explaining myself, she always says, let me save you some time, my sweetheart. Nothing good can come from that. And let me tell you something. What has happened to me over the last 2 years, every time she's told me that, let me tell you what's up. Nothing good has come from that. So I just want to share that with you. So where are we at? We're talking about God's inspiration. God's inspiration, not man's inspiration. Now, does that mean that I don't have a support network? You betcha, I have a support network. I go to those guys on speed dial. I mean, I'm crazy about my men, the men that came before me, and the men that come after me. And they keep me, there's a fortress of them. But I also make sure that those men have a God. You know, you hear that my sponsor has a sponsor, my friends have a sponsor, the whole thing, but I want to make sure that my sponsor has a God. I want to make sure that the information that's being filtered down to me, the men that I hang out with, and the women that my wife allows me to speak to once in a while, that they all have a strong program. I'm just joking, of course. I want to make sure I'm surrounded by a fortress of strong people, but that every one of them is being inspired by God. And that's where page 86, 87, and 88 comes to. And when I'm slipping, this is something new that's happened in my sobriety the last couple weeks, I go to page 85. Which I never used to do. I think maybe Spike told me about that. I never used to do. Page 85, all of a sudden, when I'm slipping, when I'm doing stuff like that, I'm not supposed to listen to this. On page 85. It is easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. How many people do you know, Mike, this is not our first time around, that we rested on our laurels? You know what? I got 5, 6, 7, 15, 17 years, 22 years. I'm doing fine. Maybe I don't need to go to that meeting. Already in this meeting, 4 or 5 people have walked out. I told you about the person that was on her way to the meeting and found that I was speaking and didn't come to the meeting. It's easy to just say, you know what, things are going just fine. It's easy to rest on our laurels. Something that I heard in the last couple weeks that I really love is that you're either walking away for a drink, walking towards a drink, or you're walking away for a drink. You're either going uphill, you're never coasting uphill. You're either moving towards God or you're falling downhill. And you know that I shared a friend of ours who I thought was doing great. They was coming to our meetings, and she took her own life in the last couple months. And then you know I shared about when this meeting also on January 1st, a young man, beautiful looking, gorgeous, Marine type of guy, took his own life. You never know when our last day is going to be, and you never know when that inspiration is going to leave, and all of a sudden we're going to be desperate. So we need to constantly be filling up the gas tank. So let's go back to page 87. What we used to have a hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. So I'm in this study this morning. I write down, God, I'd love to hear from you directly. And I'm walking the dogs today, and I'm walking around the lake. What a beautiful day. Was this an amazing, beautiful day? Did anyone get to see the beautiful day that it was?
Yes.
I mean, if you don't know how beautiful this is in South Florida, if you're like live in a cardboard box or something, the rest of the country is like freezing, under snow, miserable. The West is under rain and miserable. We're like 74 and sunny. It's like gorgeous. I'm walking the dogs and I go, and I remember that I wrote down this morning, I'd love to hear from God. And I say something just like haphazardly, Sally. I say something haphazardly and I say, I'd love to get a sign. Now, I'm not saying that I do this a lot because you don't test God. But somehow today I just said to him, you know, I'd love to have a sign. I'd love to just know that you're still in my corner, that, you know, you're going to be helping me with this major decision that my wife and I need to make like immediately. And I thought to myself, it would be nice to have a sign. And I'm walking the dogs, and a week ago I lost the key to the house while I was walking the dogs. And God bless you. And the place where I walk the dogs is a huge golf course. It's been a week. There's grass everywhere. I don't know where I lost the key. I didn't even know I lost the key until I came home and the key wasn't on the key ring. It wasn't like I knew exactly where it was. And I said to God this morning, I'd love to get a sign. And I looked down. Out of the entire golf course, there was the key. And that's exactly what I said, Kevin. That's exactly what I said. I was like, amen. That's a great sign. You know what I mean? I was like, wow, that's great. Okay, you are. Okay, you are. Exactly. And he does that. No, I didn't pray to St. Anthony. I went right to the boss. I went right to God. Okay, I don't need any, you know, I go right to the chief head honcho, the creator. I go right over the saints' heads, right to God. And I said, God, you know, just give me a sign, boom. It was like that. Now, does that happen like that in all my life? I don't know. Because what is usually, what the big book says, what happens to be an occasional hunch or inspiration, sometimes we're getting signs all during the day, and it goes over our head. A lot of times, if you have a group of men or women that are in your text messaging program or whatever it is, how they get in contact with you, I'll be going through something, and all of a sudden I'll get a text from Mark or one of the guys. That's exactly what I'm going through at that moment. How many times does that happen to you? Come on, you know that. You get that exact text message. Hang on. I'm like about to fall off the cliff. I get a text message from Larry Binder. Hang on. You'll get through it right at that moment. Now, how does that work? It works because we have a central calling agency. 1-800-GOD. We all check in with them in the morning and let them know where we're at. I have an unlimited text messaging program with GOD. And I continually go to him, Now, I have a new friend in my life. And he's new on the path with God, and he's not even sure if he believes in God, and he's newly praying to God, and I want to tell you what I told him in the last week, because I think this will help you. God is looking to be in relationship with us. He's looking to have a relationship with us. It means a to and a fro, but it's not going to happen overnight. It doesn't happen overnight. Now, it could happen overnight, but because a lot of us have alcoholism, I don't know if you do, I have alcoholism, which means my brain is on 24/7, except for 15 minutes when I'm sleeping. That means I get in the way of my relationship, of my hearing from God. And if that happens to you, I want to tell you, just press through. What I mean by press through is just do it anyway. Continue to pray and continue to work with that. Now, why did I bring all this stuff up about God? Because unless you have a God in your life, you're going to not even have the desire to do the 10 step. You're not going to want to take a look at this. Now, let's take a look at the sheet. If you don't have the sheet, let's just look at page 87. The following is a guide that is drawn from the Alcoholics Anonymous, page 84 through 86. I'm sorry, on page 84. It says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. There's many different inventories. One of them, as my friend pointed out to me today, is the spot check inventory, which means this. I'm at work. I'm acting like a jerk. Spot check inventory. God, what's going on with me right now? Where am I? Selfish, dishonest, resentful, self-seeking? What am I doing? What's going on? What's going on with me? That's a spot check inventory. Do I need to owe an amends right now? And a lot of times, when I'm acting like a jerk and I'm trying to look for reasons why it is, I can't figure out the reasons. It doesn't matter what the reasons are. We still need to do the inventory and we still need to make amends for that behavior. That's a spot check inventory. The inventory that we do at the end of the day, that I do on my knees, is this inventory. Where was I resentful? Anybody in here ever been resentful? Where was I selfish? Was dishonest? Afraid? Now, one of the ones that you can work on right away is dishonesty. Brothers and sisters, if you're here tonight and it's your first meeting, don't think you can do... This is one of the steps, Larry, you'll like this. This is one of the steps that you don't have to do in order. There are some of the steps that you do have to do in order. I believe that you have to do 4 and 5 in order, and I believe you have to do 8 and 9 in order. Some people might disagree with me, but this is one of the steps, the 10th step, that you could do it on day one of your sobriety. And this is one of the ways that you can start looking at, are you growing in sobriety? You know how people tell me that I'm growing, but I don't know? Let me tell you something. You can tell right from your inventory at the end of the night how well you're doing. Was I dishonest? Let's look at dishonest. You could be sober one day. You're in the halfway house. You're stealing food. I know that none of you guys ever did that. And because maybe none of you guys ever were in a halfway house, but we stole some food from each other. And I know you did, Anthony. It's not really stealing when you're in the halfway house. It's almost like you know the other person wants to give it to you, but they're not around. And you always say like this, I'll put it back later. You know what I'm saying? I'll put it back later. And your intentions are really to put it back. It's not like you ever do, but you want to. And that's kind of half the battle. Right there, I'm dishonest. Right there in dishonest. At the end of the day, have I been dishonest? You can write down right there. You took something that wasn't yours. Was I dishonest? Yes. Was I afraid? If you're anything like me, that was yes for up until yesterday. That was my first 9 years. Yes. Do I owe an apology? That's easy to go through. Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? person, my friend Ray, made an amends to me on something that I didn't even realize a couple weeks ago. I knew how strong his program, it didn't mean anything to me, but I knew how strong his program was because he made amends to something to me that I would have never even noticed. That's how you know how strong your program was. Was I thinking of myself most of the time? My friend Marissa said that in the beginning she was writing that down all the time. Probably. Because we, listen, I'm always on my mind. I don't know about you. Are you always on your mind? You guys aren't thinking about me, are you? No, you're thinking about you. So you're always on your mind. Obviously, Ben, you're on your mind. Larry, you're on your mind. And I'm on my mind. So most of the time, we are thinking about ourselves. But as we start to go on through the years, or even the months, guess what happens? Less and less and less. And that's how we'll be able to check. You see how amazing this 10-step inventory is? For the people that feel like they can't do this because they're not up to that, or they haven't done the fourth or fifth step, the 10th step is anyone could do it. Dylan, anyone could do it. This is something that could be done tonight. Tonight you can go home and do the 10th step and know that you're in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can even say that you're working the steps. Because the 10th step is one of the most important steps there is. God has ordained the 10th step. You know, there's a place that God, that, you know, listen, it's in the Bible. I mean, I always say another book. It's a place in the Bible. And they were speaking to this one teacher, and he said, how do I say this? If you have a problem with your brother, leave the altar or leave where you're at and leave that area and go settle the problem with your brother before you ask God for your blessings. Okay? Now listen to what I'm saying. You have a problem with somebody in your immediate life, your brother or your sister, which is everyone here, your friends, your whatever it is. You have a problem with them, but then you're continuing to ask God for blessings as you're already having problems with your brothers and sisters. Settle it. Go heal that. Go heal that with the person. Go make amends with the person. Then go to God and ask the blessings. You follow me? That it's a spiritual principle. I'm glad that's funny, but it's also very important. Okay. Was I thinking of myself most of the time? We already answered that probably. Or was I thinking what I could do for others? This is a great thing if you have sponsees, or you have people that you're helping. If you have one day or whatever your program is, you can always be helping other people. You know, the saying in AA we have is what? You can't keep it unless you give it away. And that's the truth. That's a principle. Another principle that I wanted to speak to you about tonight, you know, usually I take 2 weeks on the 10th step, but it's just not possible. But another principle that I wanted to speak to you about tonight is the spiritual principle on page 90 of the 12 and 12. Remember I spoke to you guys about the 12 and 12? If you guys are here for the first time, the 12 and 12 is the book conjunction with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I highly recommend you guys getting that, okay? Sean, 12 and 12. Indispensable. On page 90 of the 12 and 12, it says this. It's a spiritual axiom, which means a rule. That every time that we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. So for the people that walked out of here tonight, or the people that you go to a meeting and you leave, you hate the speaker. You know, he mentions Buddha. He mentions Jesus. He mentions Allah. He mentions the Bible. He mentions Narcotics Anonymous. Well, go to NA and then mention Alcoholics Anonymous. You'll be stoned. As a matter of fact, that was the first martyr, Stephen. He mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, and he was stoned. And I don't mean got high, I mean he was killed for saying that. It's a spiritual axiom that every time that we are disturbed, I'm breaking every rule tonight. No matter what the cause, I mean I only got 2 more weeks, what am I going to do? You can't throw me out now. I can't speak here for another 2 years, by then you'll already forget, I already messed all this thing up. If someone hurts us and we are sore, it's our problem. If we get offended and we leave, it's our problem. It's a spiritual axiom that any time that I'm disturbed, it's my problem. It's something wrong with me. Now, how does that work? Someone harms us, they hurt us, they harm us. Because if we're spiritually centered, if we're God-centered, as Russell says, it doesn't bother, well, everything bothers me, but it doesn't bother people that are spiritually centered as much as, you see what I'm saying? Everything still bothers me, but it bothers me a lot less. Years ago, if I would have heard it, if someone said that they weren't coming to a meeting that I was speaking at, you know, I would have dragged them in here by their feet, and I'd say, look how spiritual I am, don't you get it? So even though at first it bothered me for a second, I realized the thing that you always hear, that what people think of you is what? None of your business, right? And do you believe that to be true? It is none of our business. And here's the other thing that I want to tell you. No matter who you are, no matter who you are in here, even James, there's going to be people that love you. There's going to be people that like you. There's going to be people that tolerate you. And there's going to be people that hate you. For the color of your skin, for wearing a Star of David, for having a cross, for talking with an accent, for having jewelry in your face. There's people that are going to hate you for no reason. Don't know you. Never met you. They already don't like you. So no matter what you do, you can't win the entire room over anyway, right? So if there's a choice between you coming up and getting a paper in the front of the room or looking cool and saving your life, you know what I found though about in the last 9 years? I'm not interested in looking good or saving my face. I need to save my tushy.
That's right.
And in AA before my last sobriety, before I relapsed, I was always worried about looking cool. Tonight I wore a nice shirt in here. I had a nice long sleeve shirt. It got hot. I went and put on a t-shirt. I have to worry about myself. I can't worry about your perception of me. Now, someday I'm going to get to the place where Tony and Eddie and all those guys are, where what you say to me doesn't bother me. I'm not there yet. But what a great ideal that is. What a great shooting for. What a great shooting for perfection that thing is that I'd love to be at. I'd love to be at a place where nothing bothers me. And maybe that'll happen someday. Maybe the day that happens is the day the Lord calls me home and then I get to see it from heaven. I don't know. But until that time, I get to work for it. Okay, let's finish up here. We don't want to get stuck over here. We're almost done. I have to tell you something amazing. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should have been taken. At all times, we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God once to remove them. That's one. Two, we discuss them with someone immediately, like our sponsor. We make amends quickly if we harmed anyone. And then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. You know, I have a friend in here that I've been friends with for 18 years. I used to follow him around when I was newly sober, and then we lost contact with each other for a while, and then I relapsed, and then I came back, and we're in the same home group. We have, over the years, butted heads on several different occasions. Several different occasions. As one time in a meeting, I couldn't stand what he was saying so much that I shouted out, "Enough already," while he was speaking in front of all our room. And this is a guy that I just love. I know his children. I knew his parents, everything. But I'm an alcoholic. I have issues. So I just shouted out, "Yeah, we get it already." Now, the moment that meeting ended, you know what I needed to do? I needed to go make serious amends. Because it's not what he was saying. It's about what's going on with me. Now, people come to the podium and they're famous for telling you what they don't believe in. They don't believe in anything, but they love to tell you what they don't believe in. You know, like they're up here saying, "I don't believe in Jesus. I don't believe in Allah. I don't believe in it." No one's really concerned about what you don't believe in. We want to know what's working in your life that you do believe in. When you can come up here and say, "This is what's working in my life, helping people is working in my life, doing the steps is working in my life, being of service for 40 years is working in my life," that's what I want to hear. But people come from the podium and they start saying stuff like this: "I believe in the great aura, the train of energy," and all this kind of stuff. Now, even though that may not be my specific belief system, if I walk out of that meeting, and I almost have, I've already passed judgment on who that person is and that they have nothing to offer me. What is a great sign of humility is, regardless of what people's ideas are, or regardless of where they come from, or their religious beliefs or anything, is that I can sit here and I could give value to what another person's saying. My entire life, I character assassinated you for the moment, your skin color, your hair, if you didn't have enough hair gel, that was a big one for me. Any of those things, I could, you know what I'm talking about. Not enough hair gel is serious at where I'm from. That means you got low class. And I character assassinated you. What I found out is this: God created all of us. We're all in process. Some of us are at the beginning of the process. Some of us are in the middle of the process. And some of us in here tonight could be called home this week and we'd be at the end of the process. It's a, like my mom told me a while back, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. Life is a marathon, it's not a sprint. Don't gauge where you're at in your life right now to gauge what's going to happen in your future. Last thing I want to say, I got 20 seconds. There's a guy that was in the meeting this morning. No, you know what, I'll tell you that meeting, I'll tell you that next week. You get to come back next week. I'll see you guys next week. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Ruby.
Awesome.
Thank you, Ruby.
Okay,